Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, and welcome to Indie Streak. My name is Rachel Galvin, and as you know, I interview film industry professionals on this show. If you've missed any of the shows, you can go back and listen to the archives. Last week, it was a great interview with Scott Shermer. We talked about his film Found, a horror film that focuses on character development. It was the relationship between two brothers in a dysfunctional family, but the film overall is a horror film because the younger brother finds a head in a bowling bag and discovers that his older brother is a serial killer. So that's hanging over him, and it's quite an interesting story, and it's for the horror fan, but also for someone like me that's not so much of a horror fan fanatic. I really enjoyed it because the beginning of the story is more of just a family drama. The younger brother's being bullied at school. There's dysfunction in the family. There's fighting and abuse going on. And the older brother obviously has something wrong with him from the get-go. So it's very interesting, and it was a great interview. But today I'm interviewing producer and director Kyle Roberts about his film, The Post-Human Project, and I believe I have him on the line. Kyle, are you there?
Yeah, hi, Rachel.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Excellent.
Great. I have so many questions for you, so I'm going to dive right in. For those that haven't seen your movie, give us a quick plot description about the film.
Yeah, basically it's a teen superhero movie. That's kind of the genre. It's very independent. Like, we're not, you know, trying to shy away from that. But basically what we wanted to try to do from the heart of it is make a heart of kind of an 80s John Hughes movie with the flair of J.J. Abrams and do that on a very low budget. So the film basically follows five teenagers as their kind of last day of high school going into the rest of their life. You know, there's a lot, I think a lot of people kind of remember that time anyway, like your whole life is about to change. And for them, literally, it changes way, you know, way more than they could ever imagine.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, and tell me a little bit about how you found your cast. They seem to work together so well.
Sure, yeah. We worked with Michelle DeLong, who's a casting agent here in Oklahoma, and we had several sessions with her, and then we sent out auditions all over Texas and Missouri and a little bit in Arkansas as well, and came up with our crew out of those guys.
Mm-hmm. And you had some great locations. Was it difficult to get the school? I know sometimes it's really hard to get permission to shoot at a school. Was that hard?
Yeah, that's kind of the beauty of filming in Oklahoma, is that for the most part, like, everyone's really excited, especially if you could share your passion for the project. They're excited about it. And so it really wasn't that hard, almost any of it. It wasn't really that hard. A lot of the stuff in Quartz Mountain, which is where kind of the mountain stuff was in Southwest Oklahoma, and that was a lot of fun. It's probably the most fun we had as a crew because that's all we were doing. It was about 7 days of filming down there together, and it's kind of like just movie camp. Like, our phones didn't really work, and basically out there making a movie together.
So you actually literally camped out?
Well, we stayed at a resort there. But it wasn't quite that rustic. Yeah, but it's definitely out there in the middle of nowhere. And, like, our phones didn't work most of the time. And, it's 7 days, 12-hour days shooting a movie.
Wow. And you had a hospital, you had an office, and, you know, the mountain. Mm-hmm. You had all kinds of different locations. Did it take a long time to find all of these? And did you have to get permits? Or how does it work in Oklahoma?
Yeah, always permits. And that's kind of why you also have to have insurance, too. And that's actually what helped us on all the locations. They were all very, very affordable, if not free, for us. But since we had insurance, you know, that definitely helped that because it could cover the cost if we did break anything or whatever. But did that answer your question?
Yeah. And tell me about those rock climbing scenes. Do you have someone else stand in and do those?
Sure. Yeah. We had actors that were rock climbing pros. And we had Aaron Gibson, who owns Rocktown here in Oklahoma City, which is a rock climbing gym. And so he kind of took over all of that aspect of it, of, you know, securing all the lines and getting all that set up for us as well.
Mm-hmm. Even in the very beginning of the movie, it grabs you right away because the lighting was great in the alleyway scenes. It reminded me kind of Dick Tracy's. Was that intentional, some of the vibrant lights that were going on in that alleyway?
Sure. I don't know if it's exactly Dick Tracy what we were going for, but that's definitely
well,
cool.
Well, that's what I thought of.
Well, yeah, and I think the artist actually is from Oklahoma, which for us, like, that's a big part of everything we do is we wanted this, like, homegrown thing to show people what we could do here, you know. But yeah, I mean, definitely the super vibrant, you know, lighting and colors. It's a comic book movie, you know, so I think that was a big part of it as well, to kind of capture that side of it, but also the teen angst side of it as well.
Mm-hmm. I really liked the comic books that would come and go and act as a segue in between the scenes. Now, Sterling Gates drew those, correct?
He wrote he was co-writer of our film. He's DC mm-hmm. Comics writer. He wrote for Supergirl for several years and several other books for DC.
Yeah,
but,
those were great. And
go ahead. Thanks. Yeah, the transition thing was actually my idea that I brought to it. of just trying to figure out, because at the beginning, brought those in from stills from the film, and then I animated it.
Awesome. Okay.
But yeah.
wonderful.
So that's just a lot of post-production kind of After Effects work and stuff to make it look like a drawing kind of thing and put that into a comic book form from there.
Okay.
But yeah, from the beginning, we actually wrote it and shot it and everything as if it could be a web series or a feature film.
Mm-hmm.
And so
that was going to be one of my questions.
yeah. And so the transitions are there. Really, we didn't really plan that until close to the end. And I was trying to figure out, like, how, like, yeah, we could dip to black or we could, you know, do whatever. But it's like, how do we actually bring this so it's seamless together? And it just felt natural, you know, to kind of come in and out of these comic book transitions and actually enhance our story as well at times where you don't know what's going on or what's happening. It's a nice segue into the next chapter, hopefully, if we did it right.
Yeah, I also liked how you had the words about the chapter. It might be in a coffee cup. It might be on a wall and a mm-hmm. book. Was that difficult to do?
Some of them, yeah. I don't want to give away too much, but like chapter one, we graffitied a wall, which, you know, mm-hmm. took 8 or 9 hours for a graffiti artist to do. So, but that part, that's actually another part that I brought to it that I'm really proud of, that you don't really see a whole lot in films. That a lot of films do it to where it's like, I don't know, I think Heroes did this a lot, which was cool at the time, but it was digitally, you know, in the chapters. And mm-hmm. Some are digital, but most of ours are kind of organically in the chapters. Like it's physically on a wall or it's on a bag or it's on a poster or a magazine, which to me, it's just kind of an interesting way to do that and kind of fits with the comic mm-hmm. book world too, as well.
Yeah. Now, I know I kind of could tell that the car scene was green screened. Was there a lot of green screen used in other aspects?
Yeah. Yeah, the car screen, green screen stuff, we basically just did that out of kind of poor man's process of doing that instead of attaching a camera to a car and you got to drive around a bunch and then get the right lighting. Like, at least we're in a controlled environment. But but yeah, we just tried to do that the best that we could with our budget. We also green screened some of the mountaintop, the very top of the mountain. We did all the wide shots there, but that was like a, I think it was a five or six hour hike as a crew together up the mountain. And so once we were up there, we only had, you know, however many hours that day, and we were only allocated one day to do that. So we got all of our wide shots there, and then we got our close-ups in the studio later, got all of our plates and stuff, our background plates of the mountaintop. And then, you know, superimpose those with the green screen shots we did later in the studio. But I think that's about it. Obviously, like, falling off the mountain,
right,
which is in the trailer and stuff too. We did all on green screen because we didn't throw someone off the mountain.
Right.
But yeah.
Was it difficult lip syncing the actors to the music in the car? Was that hard when they were trying to sing to the music?
I don't think so. What we did was we recorded it. We did have a real rough cut when we were shooting, but it's still the same beat. And we had Lindsay kind of carry the tune, who plays Gwen.
Mm-hmm.
And we just gave her a small headphone, earpiece, that she can listen to
mm-hmm.
and sing to that. So, yeah.
And you had an excellent soundtrack. How did you find your music?
Thank you. Yeah, that's probably, like, what I know most. This is my first feature film, but I've done a
mm-hmm.
bunch of music videos and stop motions and stuff like that. But so and, independent music and local music and stuff is definitely what I know just in general. So that I knew that part was
mm-hmm.
going to come natural. And I knew, like, as a – you know, trying to do this kind of John Hughes-esque thing and pay homage to that.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, any kind of good teen movie needs to have a great soundtrack. So that was
yeah.
a big part of everything that we tried to do and really spent about a year as we were doing pre-production, just listening to tracks and seeing. I didn't want to force anything, but it had to be perfect, you know, had to fit the situation. And a lot of it, if you just take that track and just look at the words, like, it has an even deeper meaning
mm-hmm.
to what's going on at the same time.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah.
Of course, the big thing about the film is the wonderful effects. And I noticed
you.
With Gwen spinning with the fire, was that intended
mm-hmm.
to refer back to the Wonder Woman comment?
I don't think so. But that's
was
awesome.
That just me? I was like, because I caught the, you know, I was a huge Wonder Woman fan. I thought I was Wonder Woman when I was a kid.
Oh, cool.
And so
well,
when you said, you know, when he mentions
yeah.
that in the beginning. And then
yeah,
she's
no,
spinning with a fire, I'm like, ooh.
Yeah, we just
try
to come up with something that's, you know, visually striking, but also kind of gets them out of that jam in that situation. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of come together and use their powers as kind of a team up, you know,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. But yeah, even that effect, that effect with the 360 stuff was actually it was definitely the hardest of everything that we did. I think each arm rendering, just the render process was, I think, 23 hours for right and left arm
wow.
rendering out the fire. Because basically what you do on that is you're creating an element from scratch. Like, it's not like,
mm-hmm.
oh, we have this footage and we're throwing it in there. Like, you are creating it from scratch, and so you have to figure out, you know, what it would do, what it would, like, with the wind and velocity and, you know, everything of how that affects
mm-hmm.
everything else. And so, yeah, it takes a long time.
How did you do the healing scenes? Was that done backwards, or how did you do that?
Yeah, the healing scenes,
healing.
What we did live is we have an amazing makeup artist, Tony Marlowe, who did all of our special effects, which a lot of people, when you hear special effects, that not, a lot of times that refers to in-camera effects, and then visual effects are post-production type effects, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
But anyway, so she is amazing at that, and basically what we did is we put the, whatever kind of damage was on there first, and sometimes that would take a couple hours, and then we wiped it off real quick and shot that, and then in post, stitched them together and healed, you know, that effect.
Wow. Yeah, you have so many great visual effects and special effects. What was the most difficult besides what we just talked about? Was there other things that you found difficulties with? Doing
I'm trying to think. The whole thing, honestly, the whole thing was a leap of faith for me, because it's kind of, in theory, I've done a lot of this stuff in shorts or music videos, but never as a feature. I think,
mm-hmm.
I mean, probably the single thing is just the whole project. Like, it was, I think it was 14 terabytes of information. So that's,
wow.
you know, by far, you know, considerably more than anything else I've done. The gravity of, you know, shooting 12 to 14 hour days in a 30-day shoot, Mm-hmm. And that's just the beginning, 10 months of visual effects, which I did about 80% of, you know, staying up to 4 a.m.
Wow.
Several nights a week. and then getting up and doing a regular job kind of thing, too.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, I think if that's an answer, I don't know, maybe it's a cop-out, but just the whole situation, like the whole project was just, you know, is definitely a huge task. But at least we got something done.
What type of software did you use to do some of those effects?
Yeah, a typical workflow is for visual effects. It was a lot of After Effects, and then we did some Cinema 4D as well for 3D animation. But typical workflow is a whole Adobe suite, so Premiere and After Effects, kind of back and forth. We did a little bit of color grading in After Effects, and also in speed grading.
Okay, now tell me about some of the props that you use, like the kind of the high tech handcuffs. Did you make those?
Yeah, our art director did all that. His name is Kerry Hawkins, and he was awesome. It's his first feature film to do anything like that. He's done a lot of plays and other things, but so we just told him kind of what we needed and gave him, you know, as much time as we could. And he did an amazing job, especially with our budget of just kind of coming up. I think he would be able to explain it a little bit better, but as far as I know, that's just some kind of LED lights that he put into these cuffs, and then in post, like, I enhanced them. But yeah, it's just, like, yeah, trying to do the best we can and to create this world that we kind of came up with on a super small budget.
Yeah. What did you shoot with? What kind of camera did you use?
Yeah, we shot with the Red Epic, which a lot of feature films are shot with nowadays. I think even most of Amazing Spider-Man, the first one, was shot on the Epic. So obviously we don't have the kind of budget that does.
Yeah.
That did. But yeah, the fact that, you know, we shot on something, we shot in 4 or 5K for most of it. So just super high resolution. And I think our final output was a 3K timeline. So definitely, you know, as big or bigger than final outputs of even other features, mainstream features.
Now, I don't know if you want to talk about your budget at all. I don't know. Some people don't want to mention how much their budget was.
Yeah.
But you can.
We'll just say
if you want.
It's small. it was very independent. And yeah. Yeah, it's always a tough thing because once it's out there, then everyone knows and you can't ever sell your movie for more than that.
Right.
And there's a lot to that. Like, I know for a fact I saved our film over $250,000 for everything that I did. Obviously I want to make that. You know, it's part of our
wasn't
part of our physical budget, but definitely part of our actual budget because I did all that work. So it's got to amount for something. And really everybody, everyone works for super cheap in the, especially compared to commercial work, which you just have to do for film work, especially independent film.
How did you go about getting some of your budget? Was it out of your own pocket, or did you do Kickstarter? Didn't I see something?
We did a couple Indiegogo campaigns that were fairly successful. I think we raised about $15,000 from there. And then our highest grossing thing was a benefit dinner, kind of like a banquet, which is a really nice place here in Oklahoma City. And we sold it out. We sold 250 tickets at a dinner, so huge round tables. And I think we raised $30,000 that night. So just that night itself, we raised that. Then we did a whole bunch of, again, with the music element of it, I think we did 4 benefit concerts, which was awesome. Just through that, through all of this, and by the way, everything we ended up raising was crowdfunded, which to me was kind of getting me through all those late nights and everything, knowing that people believed in it and wanted to see this project made versus having, you know, one to a few investors that are kind of looking over your shoulder and waiting for their return. Assessment. It was more of like, yeah, we believe in you guys. Let's see this happen. We want to see this happen. It's got to happen. We did a bunch of concerts, which helped, and we just ended up getting a bunch of kind of street credit, especially here locally, through that as well, you know, while raising money. which I didn't know what to do. Didn't know any other way to do it, but it mm-hmm. worked.
How long did it take you to shoot overall?
It was around 30 days of actual physical production, and it was spaced yeah. out over, I think, over 2 or 3 months. So it was a lot of nights and weekends, but then sometimes we were during the day. And for sure the first week is actually when we were in Quartz Mountain, and it was like most of their spring break. So we got, I think we got 8 days done the first week out of the 30. So we got a big chunk of it knocked out like the very first week of production.
Mm-hmm. And the, you know, the fight scenes looked really authentic. Were you spending a lot of time preparing for those?
Thanks. Yeah, we spent a little bit of time. I wish we spent more. That's actually, I think, for me anyway, is one of the weaker parts, but I'm really glad that you said that.
I thought they were very good.
Oh, excellent. And some of that we were able to cheat through camera angles and, you know, the music and sound. Sound's a big part of fighting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really is on everything of the film. But, yeah, Rhett Terrell, who plays Finch in the film, actually choreographed all mm-hmm. of those fights. So he definitely deserves some high praise for that, because a lot of it was we tried to schedule stuff, and it's hard, you know, just working with everyone's schedule, especially on an independent project. And so a lot of times mm-hmm. it's like, let's meet the day before or the day of early that morning and start rehearsing and going through it, and they have an idea what they're supposed to do. But Rhett knew exactly what he was doing. So I think it kind of worked. Because, like, a couple mm-hmm. of the fights, like, he was battling Adam, who is our teleporter. But mm-hmm. he's not really supposed to know how to fight. You know, he's just kind of, he's a teenager. So I think it kind of works to the advantage of, you know, Adam is not supposed to be this supreme fighter. He's just mm-hmm. kind of scrappy, you know. So I think it kind of worked to our advantage. Maybe if it was too rehearsed, it would look even worse, you know. Versus right. Adam just kind of rolling with the punches, so to say.
Yeah, I thought it looked very natural.
Thank you.
You know, it wasn't anything elaborate, but it was very
right.
natural, I thought.
Excellent, thank you.
Yeah. Now, are you intending to do a sequel to this? Because I could see it could lend itself to it very well, or do a series,
yeah.
like you mentioned.
Did you stick yeah. around to the post deal?
I did. I knew that was happening.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah, well, any good comic book movie needs to have a post-credit scene.
Right.
Yeah, we set it up for that, and it's basically it just comes down to a funding thing. I don't know. I do know. I'm not going to spend a year fundraising like we did with this one. So if we, you know, we sell this, like, that's my goal, to sell it for enough to make the next one, you know. And that would be great. And I already know, talking to several of the actors, that they would be excited about it. And, you know, we'd love to make it even bigger than the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I couldn't even imagine if I had even a $2 or $3 million budget, like, I couldn't, you know, we could make something amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And again, without saying what this one was, it was less than that. I'll just say that.
Yeah.
For what we did, I think it's just, I'm not saying I'm incredible or we're incredible, but it's just, I love that at this day and age, having the right people that know what they're doing makes all the difference in the world. And at the end of the day, it's kind of the most creative and the best story wins
mm-hmm.
instead of how much money you have,
right.
which is, you know, it's just phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you're going to be coming out to the FSC Super Geek Film Festival, right, in July?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Yeah, so I get to meet you, so that's great. Has this been shown anywhere else, or is this going to be the premiere?
It hasn't. We have done kind of our cast and crew screening, mm-hmm. and then it's going to have its world premiere here in Oklahoma City, and so you guys uh-huh. will be the SuperCon will be the second screening.
Great.
Because we just wrapped it. We just wrapped up really mm-hmm. a couple months ago. So that's pretty exciting that it's still kind of on the beginning of all of this.
So, and then are you going to take it around to different film festivals? Is that your plan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we submitted, and I'm sure you've heard or know a lot about that game, but it's just a whole own thing, you know?
We
submitted to 25 festivals, and it's just a lot of them
wow.
need to hear back to like a month before, you know? So they range from you know, we wanted to make sure, like, it was a big part of, you know, everything we did, that the world premiere was here in Oklahoma City. But then from there, you know, we're going to Miami next, and then we submitted to Comic-Con, so we'll see if we get in that, and several other festivals all over the United States, and some in Canada as well, Toronto.
That's great. So right now you're just kind of spending time on this, or are you already planning something else?
We're kind of working on some of the next stuff, and honestly, my wife and I had our first daughter in the middle of all this. And so I'm really excited to actually have some time and be a dad. She just turned one last week. So it's great to actually have that time to spend with her. So I'm enjoying this at the moment. I know other stuff is coming in, like it's already in the works, but I'm not worried about it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. You're also known for your stop motion animation, and you have these great videos on YouTube and Vine. How long does it take to do a scene like your Spider-Man versus Lizard or your Batman and Robin? How long does it take to do one of those little scenes?
Yeah, that's a good question. Really everything's totally different. But say it, like a lot of it, I green screen and then, have to use different things to hold up the figures and then cut that out and post later. So say for like Spider-Man versus Lizard, I think that was like a 3-week process. So that one didn't take very long at all, because a lot of it we shot kind of in camera live.
Mm-hmm.
But say, for example, like when we recreated the early 90s X-Men cartoon intro with action figures,
mm-hmm.
I think that took 3 months total. And so it was just a lot of, and especially it's always easier to do your own thing versus completely recreating something else. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Like when you're doing your own thing, especially with stop motion, like when you're doing your own thing, you can have them kick or punch or do whatever you want. But when you're trying to recreate something exactly how it used to be, it's mm-hmm. 10 times harder, because every single frame needs to look like it did, you know, in its original form. And so I always love doing those, because it's a huge challenge. But also, you know, if we do it right, like we did a Ninja Turtle one and an X-Men, it's just this really kind of eclectic, total nerd geek out, you know, nostalgic moment for everybody. And it's crazy. Like whenever we posted the Ninja Turtle one, someone I didn't even know in Oklahoma City, like we were talking about it, and he came up to me at a coffee shop and gave me a hug and said, "Thank you for making that. I saw it this morning." Like, it brought back so many memories as a child, and I was like, "Okay, awesome." But that's exactly what it
awkward.
Does, you know, it's this whole new art form of, you know, these action figures and this, Nathan Poppy is a buddy of mine that I do all these stop motions with. And he hand draws all the background with this kind of highlighter, almost childish artwork.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just super bright and vibrant and, nostalgic. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I watched the Spider-Man versus Lizard last night, and I love the Back to the Future comes in. I was like, oh, yes!
Oh, good.
I was really excited. Yeah, that was great. It does give you that kind of, you know, nostalgia like you talked about. You get all excited about it. It's true.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree. Now, you won an Emmy. Tell me about that.
Yeah, that was for a Thunder, NBA Thunder commercial for the Oklahoman, which is our local newspaper here in Oklahoma. And it was a 30-second spot kind of promoting their photography and that they're covering every game.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we did was we used photos from the photographers, and I took those photos and animated them as from still images to kind of resemble slow motion, super slow motion, 1,000 frames a second kind of stuff. And so I guess it's kind of animated photography. And that's what ended up winning the Emmy.
That's great.
For a commercial spot.
That must have been exciting.
Thank you.
Now, you mentioned that the Post-Human Project had the heart of a John Hughes movie and the energy of mm-hmm. X-Men. So obviously these directors inspired you. Tell me a little bit more about some of your inspiration and how you got involved in directing in the first place.
Yeah, well, really, I mean, John Hughes is by far my favorite director. It was always a dream of mine
Thank
to
you.
Try to work with him. You know, as a kid, and obviously he passed away a few years ago. And so, you know, doing all these music videos and all this stop motion and all this stuff, I'm kind of inspired by a lot of things, music mainly. And really, you know, several people, you know, when they interview me or whatever, they talk about, you know, when's the first feature, you know, when are you going to, you know, actually take that leap? I wasn't really ever interested until it just felt like it was time. Like, it felt like I had made enough connections, I had learned enough, especially about visual effects and directing and all of that. And then it was a no-brainer that I really wanted to do something kind of to pay homage to John Hughes' work, because it inspired me so much. Like, everything that he writes, and I'm a terrible writer, by the way. That's why we have two amazing writers on our film. But his writing is so real. Like, it's incredible. Like, Breakfast Club is just by far my favorite movie.
Right.
You don't really hear that a lot. You hear people like it, but, like,
every
single
thing
that they say. Oh, excellent. That's good.
I'm a huge John Hughes fan.
Excellent. And then, you know, same even with Ferris Bueller's Day Off, it's very real to a sarcastic element to it. You know, like, none of that would happen in one day. But you could totally imagine if it did. You know, I mean, I just love his work. So we definitely wanted to do something like that. But then I love J.J. Abrams. I love what he brings to everything. So it's kind of like a flair of J.J. Abrams and heart of John Hughes on a super independent budget. and J.J. is a really great storyteller as well. And so, I really wanted to make a movie, you know, that I wanted to see. I hadn't really seen anything. I guess, you know, people could say Chronicle is probably the closest thing to that, which is kind of similar. But there's definitely, it's like found footage and stuff like that, which ours has a totally different feel than that. And the soundtrack isn't as big in that as it is in ours. Hopefully, if we did it right, it's you know, a lot more John Hughesian. But I hadn't really seen, like, where would you go if you wanted to see something like that? Like, I don't know. Maybe Chronicle is the closest thing. And so I definitely wanted to make something that, you know, I really wanted to see, and hopefully others wanted to see as well. And that's something, you know, as you know, like, independent film is where, you know, where all the risks are taken. And then, you know, who knows, maybe Hollywood tries to copy something like this. But kind of combine those two worlds. But.
Now, why don't you give everybody your website, and you also have a YouTube and a Vine, you know, give all that out so people can find out more about what you're up to.
Yeah, our website for Posthuman is posthumanmovie.com, and we have a lot of great stuff on there, and info and synopsis and information about the characters and the trailer and stuff. And probably the best way to find out what's going on with the movie, where it's screening, kind of, you know, what's happening with it at the moment is through Facebook. And if you search Posthuman Project, you'll find it. But it's also, I think it's facebook.com/ Posthuman Film on Facebook. And then, we have Twitter and Instagram, and that's Posthuman Project without the E. So, because we only allow, you know, so many characters. So it's Posthuman PROJCT on Instagram and Twitter. But, yeah, that's basically it.
And what about your YouTube? It's under your name, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. The YouTube channel is OCDeuce22, and then the name on that is just Kyle Roberts. So you can find it through there. Type in Kyle Roberts or X-Men Stop Motion. It's probably one of the first things that comes up, because I think that's...
Yeah, I think I just typed in your name and it came up.
Yeah, cool.
Okay. Well, great. Anything else that you want to mention about the film or about you before we leave?
I don't think so. You know, like I said, it's still the very beginning stages, and we've had 4 or 5 reviews right now, and all of them, you know, have been great. And so I'm kind of just at a loss for words. Like, I'm glad that people are digging what we try to do. And you spend so long on something, and you hope people like it. You hope people kind of get the vibe of what you're trying to do. And the fact that it's working right now is amazing. And we'll kind of see where it goes from there. Hopefully we can. This next stage, you know, going through the festivals is crucial. It's kind of where it lives, and mm-hmm. and hopefully survives and, you know, gets sold to a studio, or, you know, kind of dies and sits on a shelf forever, which I'm determined not to see that happen.
So, yeah. Okay, well, I get to meet you, and anybody else that wants to come out at the FSC Super Geek Film Festival, you'll be there, and we'll be showing your film. So I look forward to that, and I guess I'll
Absolutely.
See you then.
Absolutely. All right, thanks, Rachel.
All right, well, thank you so much. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, well, that was a great conversation with Kyle Roberts. I really had fun watching his film, being that like I said, I'm a huge John Hughes fan, but also a huge X-Men fan. Just looking at that tagline was enough to draw me in. But the film was a fun film, the effects are great, and there's so many little aspects to look at that are reminiscent of another sci-fi film. Like I thought of Heroes, for example, references, even though we didn't intend it with the Wonder Woman reference, it's there. It's probably in a subconscious, I don't know. But anybody that's a superhero fan will enjoy the film. So check that out. It will be, like I said, at the FSC Super Geek Film Festival. I will be posting more concrete information about dates and times once it gets a little closer on my Facebook page, which is www.facebook.com/IndieStreak. INDIE, and then streak, STREAK. Please like the page. I'm posting a ton of stuff up there. I just posted up all the awards for the Cannes Film Festival, a link to that, and I am constantly posting information about things that are going on in the film industry, events, et cetera, not only in Florida, where I live, but elsewhere as well, as well as links to shows like this, shows that I'm doing here on the show. So please like the page so that you can be kept in the loop. Okay, guys, for those that are local, on the 29th, May 29th at 7 p.m. at Willow Cedar in Boca Raton, Doc Miami has teamed up with the Sugar Sand Park at the Willow Cedar to do a screening of a documentary called In the Footsteps of Willie Sutton. And that's a whole event that's going to be going on. I will be there, so if you're local, come on out. May 29th at 7 p.m. And I mentioned the FSC Super Geek Film Festival that's coming up July 3rd through 6th at the Miami Convention Center. We have a lot of great, great films that are going to be in the festival, not only the Posthuman Project, but also Army of Frankenstein, The Legend of Red Reaper. I'll be giving a whole list soon. Of everything. I don't want to mispronounce anything, so I will be putting all that out soon. But the next few weeks, I will continue to be interviewing people that have films at the festival. So keep an eye out for that, or an ear out for that, because you'll be listening to it. Also, guys, I have a new magazine, which I've mentioned the last couple weeks, called Independent Streak Magazine. It is a flipbook online. And I am featuring some of the people I interview here on the show. Last month I featured Ian Vernon, for example, who I interviewed for his film The War I Knew, and also for the Best Little Whorehouse in Rochdale. He's come on the show twice. I did a little article about him talking about creating vibrant characters in your film and creating films that are character-based. So he was one of the people I featured in the May issue. I'm working on the June issue right now, and I am featuring Steve Waxman, who did a documentary called A Call to Serve, Florida Jews in the U.S. Military, and talking about the making of a documentary. And I'm also featuring Vicky Lau, who did an internship at The Walking Dead and also did her own short film called The Painter. And she is slated to have her film shown also at the Super Geek Film Festival. And who knows who else I'm going to be featuring. I have a bunch of other filmmakers that I'm featuring. Ted Trent, who's all been on my show, and others for his film Belleville. So all kinds of stuff coming up in the Independent Streak magazine. And my website for that is still under construction. But you can see, if you go on the front page of it, you can see the link. You have the picture of Jason Priestley on the cover for the May issue, And underneath of it is the link. And I'll be honest, I cannot get the link to work. So you have to copy it and paste it in a new window. So if you could do that and check it out, I would appreciate it. And I'm still working on that, but the magazine itself is done. So once you open it up, you get the reading pane, and you can click back and forth through the magazine pages and check it out. And like I said, I'm working on the June issue. And hopefully by the time the June issue comes out, I can figure out what's going on with the website. It's very frustrating. Now, if you want to be featured in the magazine or here on the show, please feel free to contact me. My email address is ravenprods@yahoo.com. That's RAVENPRODS at yahoo.com. And I would be happy to take a look at what you have. And next week, like I said, I'll have someone new on the show. So I will be back, same bat channel, same bat time next week, just to have a superhero illusion in there. And I'll talk to you then, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. And please let your friends know about the show and also about the magazine. I appreciate it. Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.